I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
So we are here to talk about the fall finale for Star Trek Discovery Season 1.
Yeah, their first fall finale.
Yeah, this is the ninth episode of Star Trek Discovery, Into the Forest I Go.
Big shit went down.
This is probably the biggest episode since Episode 2, The Battle of the Binary Stars.
Right.
And it always is kind of like a sequel to that. This is... kind of closing a lot of the storylines that were started with the beginning of the Klingon War.
Closed several of them earlier than I expected it to.
You know, the show is moving at a really fast pace. Yeah. Like,
given that the entire first season I was led to believe would be all kind of Klingon stuff, I'm like, there's a lot of resolution to the Klingon stuff in this one. So also clearly a new sort of direction, or definitely something big and new happens at the very end of the episode, which will stake out the territory for the second half of the season.
And so the way CBS is talking about this is they're calling episodes 1 through 9 chapter 1,
mm-hmm.
and then episodes 10 through 16, or 10 through 15, that we'll get in January and February, those are going to be chapter 2. So I
know season 2 is chapter 2, people.
No, season 1 is chapters 1 and 2.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but I really liked this episode.
Because I like the British style of TV where you might have like 3 or 6 episodes or something like that, and that's the season. I don't really care. They're clearly trying to... So how many episodes total are we going to have in season 1?
15 altogether.
Okay, that's a little bit large, given sort of, you know, like it's more than Game of Thrones does.
So we've seen 9, we got 6 more to come.
Okay.
But just to talk about the story that we saw tonight,
yep.
It picks up where the last episode left off, with the planet Pavo, inhabited by the blue dust cloud, peace-loving alien creatures.
Yep, that make Star Trek people fight each other.
Well, they were trying to make people stop fighting each other. They wanted the Klingon. They invited the Klingons to come have a sit down with
Tell
the
that to Burnham's
Federation.
Bruised ribs, man.
they got the Klingons to show up. Cole is on the sarcophagus ship, or as they're calling it now, the Klingon Ship of the Dead.
Yeah,
and
those are both pretty cool names.
Yeah, I really like. There's something called the Ship of the Dead, like that.
You mean in real life, or? Oh, you like that there's something in Trek called that?
Yeah.
I'm sure there is something called that in real life. It sounds like it's something that'd be in the Egyptian Book of
It'd make a good metal song.
Yeah. But note to self, metalheads. Note to self, metalheads. That doesn't make sense. All right. Note to metalheads.
But the Discovery is called away by a bald Vulcan admiral. Don't know that character's name. Have they said it on screen?
No, but he always seems like he means business. Like, he's like, get your ass to someplace... Yeah. Or else.
He's a character who shows up to give orders to Lorca that immediately get...
disobeyed.
Disobeyed. So, instead of returning to
Lorca
safety...
Lorca working that white privilege.
Yeah.
What an asshole.
Lorca decides he knows best, and he has a plan to use the Discovery's spore drive jumping ability to get data from... the Klingon cloaked Ship of the Dead that will allow them to detect cloaked Klingon ships.
Yep. I actually really liked this. It's a somewhat ridiculous, quick plot idea, but I thought it was a neat idea.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to watch. You got some cool visuals out of it.
When they were... It took quite a while to make it work, And I was like, man, poor Stamets looks like he's about half dead, and they're like a third of the way through it.
Yeah, you milk some drama out of it. Yeah. Stamets has to do 133 jumps to pull this off, which sounds like a much higher number than it would need to be.
Yeah.
But,
normally you think of this kind of thing as like essentially they're triangulating.
Yeah.
So like, all right, three good jumps will do it. No.
Yeah, but like Lorca wanted to be sure, so he's like, we're going to do 130 more than what we need.
That's right. So he's thorough that way. But it looked cool to see the ship just like bam, 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 you know, teleporting around. Yeah, it was like Nightcrawler when he goes to town on somebody.
They had to send people on board the Klingon Ship of the Dead to plant sensors on board the ship that would work with this.
Very, I feel, TOS-y.
Yes. So Burnham and Tyler,
her boyfriend.
Yeah, the two sweethearts.
Yep.
Infiltrate the Klingon ship. They do that. Burnham has this cool confrontation with Cole.
Yeah.
And we get some.
Yeah, she called his ass out to. She was just still buying time at that point, right?
I think like he was about to either kill her or take her prisoner, so she needed to do something.
Yeah, that's right. I think he might have been just about to execute her.
Yeah, so like by challenging him to a fight was a good way to buy time and hope that the Discovery will beam her back.
Right.
But luckily they do. They also beam back Admiral Katrina Cornwell, who is still alive.
Yay!
They beam back Tyler, who had some PTSD triggering going on.
Wasn't 100% sure he was going to make it. Also, halfway thought he was going to come back, he was going to come unglued, or be revealed as some kind of double agent. I think you have some sort of theory about that, which we'll talk later.
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
And then they also got Laurel off of the Klingon ship. Yeah. She's now a Federation prisoner. And the Discovery makes one final jump to return to Starbase after they've completed their mission. But they don't end up at the Starbase. They end up possibly in the Mirror Universe. We don't know. We'll find out in January.
Yep. I'm just saying, the next episode, even that title sounds like Mirror Universe stuff.
So what did you think of this episode?
I thought it was as mid-season finales go, the more I think about it, actually, a lot went down, and there was a lot of stuff I liked in it. I had a few kind of complaints that I thought it ended slightly with a whimper, given that it could, if it is the Mirror Universe, you could have shown some amazing things there or very dramatic things. But, and for some reason, when they were kind of, when they were giving the full pounding to the Ship of the Dead, I felt like that should almost be more satisfying. Although there were a few really badass shots in there, like the bridge shot from the Klingon perspective. Mm-hmm. But like all the getting there stuff I loved. I think for whatever reason that it was only, I think the reason I feel slightly let down by the episode was really only like from like the last 10 minutes. Almost everything up to that I was way on board.
Yeah.
Overall, very good episode.
And it did feel a little cumbersome there towards the end because they were trying to both bring closure to so many things and also set up so many things.
I was kind of shocked by how many things got closure or, clearly we're about to enter a stage two of the relationship, from Burnham and Ash to Admiral what's her name,
Cornwell. You can never remember her name.
I can never remember her name. I'm Admiral Cornwall. That's what I'm gonna say.
That's better than cornhole.
Yes. They moved to a new direction. Stamets is probably moving to a new direction. They did finally kind of. He got his big moment with his boyfriend.
The first man-on-man kiss in Star Trek history.
Yeah.
Only took 51 years.
Dr. Culber, was that right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm still trying to get his name straight in my head. But anyway, so yes, broadly speaking, happy with the episode. Minor criticisms of the sort of the last few minutes.
Yeah.
Where were you at?
That's pretty similar to the page I'm on, but the things I liked in this episode, I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
I know I say this damn near every podcast where we talk about Discovery.
Yep.
But this is probably my favorite episode of the show so far.
Yeah.
The last few episodes have felt so much more Star Trek-ish than the first few.
Yeah, and, that's interesting, I really felt how much it could change like, that fast.
Yeah, and the even Lorca kind of felt like a little bit more traditional Star Trek captain when he's having these conversations about...
Well, you know, when he was talking Stamets into doing what he did, I was like, Stamets, are you falling for his line again? You know this guy will screw with your head anyway. But it spoke to... If it was an act, it was an act that sounded like a more traditional Trek captain. And I did... at least partially believe him when he said, hey, we don't want to leave this alien planet, you know, that's a peaceful, defenseless planet to just get, shredded by the Klingons. He was saying very classic Trek kind of things. So even if some of that was an act, or at least partially a front, it was pretty Trekky.
Yeah, and I think Lorca does have, like, a hint of that, Star Trek ethos, and that, like, he sees himself as the warrior, not the explorer, not the scientist.
Right.
You know, he's mentioned several times how, like, I have this ship full of these wide-eyed scientist pussies. I need to make them into fighters. We got a war to win. But I think he just feels like it's necessary to have someone like him that...
You know in Firefly...
the movie?
Serenity?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, who's the agent guy... Chiwetel Ejiofor plays him.
Yeah.
Are we talking about the same thing?
Yes.
Yeah. He's a guy who at the end might say, if there was peacetime, he might say, I don't have any place in this world anymore. I'm a monster. I'm just going to disappear.
Yeah.
I could see Lorca being that person, where he does have this code of honor of sorts and is certainly truthful about, you know, wanting to protect his own, but is also kind of a monster.
And we saw it in an episode 4, where they had the dilithium mining planet, Korvan 4,
yeah.
I think, or Korvan 2. And, you know, he was really worried about, like, getting there to save that. And, yeah, he knows, like, the Federation needs those dilithium crystals. He wants to go there and kill Klingons, because he's mad about what they did to his last starship. Sure. But I think he did believe, like, no, like, this is, like, our duty to go and, like, save these people. That was a factor in it.
Well, one thing, because they were early on in the series, they were kind of duplicitous about some things, where they would be very, I guess, not duplicitous, but ambiguous about what his intentions were and what some people were saying. I started kind of preparing to, like, to read something into everything. And I think the show is actually doing that less now. Characters tend to be sincere in what they say. So, for instance, Laurel confessed that she wanted to defect to the Federation. Do you take her at her word or not?
I think there might be more to that, but okay. She definitely wanted to get away from Cole, and she disliked him.
Right.
But yeah, early on, like,
I feel like more characters, though, are saying things like that where I would have normally found it ambiguous, but now I'm kind of taking them at face value.
The first episode with Lorca, episode 3, I thought that he was going to be set up to be, like, the big villain, or at least, like, the big bad guy for season 1.
Right, like, he would be, like, doing increasingly horrific wartime stuff.
Yeah.
Like, go just execute all of them, you know, we don't need these prisoners. And you'd be like, oh, they really need to rebel. They better do this by the finale. But instead, he's almost shaping up to be a stronger guy.
Yeah, he did do a really nasty thing with the Admiral.
Yes.
That came out wrong.
He did try and... He did that too.
He
set her up for an assassination.
Yes, to get her out of the way because he was scared she would take his ship from him.
Yep.
But even though he can, you know, easily justify that in his mind, you know, he needs the ship to win this war to save the Federation.
Right. But that was
crossing a line.
Right. I've often mentioned that comparison to Colonel Jessup from A Few Good Men. That's even beyond probably the pale slightly for Colonel Jessup. He's not generally a kill a superior officer kind of guy. He is a cover up a killing a junior officer kind of guy. But in the larger than life world of Star Trek, it's a similar kind of ethos. He's playing that sort of role.
But now it looks like the ship is going to be away from, you know, the established Federation. It's going to be almost kind of like Star Trek Voyager, where they're off on their own.
Yeah.
At least for a few episodes.
Right. At the very least, they seem to be off the charts, essentially. And presumably the war effort will continue without them because they provided hugely important data.
I'm thinking when they get back, it'll be like, yeah, like we won the war. Like, that's done.
Yeah.
But, so Lorca's going to have... you know, he's not going to have anyone to answer to, so... There's a lot of different directions they can take that.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Do you think he's gonna like find himself without an enemy to fight? That he's gonna lose it? Is he gonna like rein it in?
I think there's gonna be an enemy to fight.
Yeah, that's true.
The show is kind of it's not super action heavy, but it does rely on that from time to time.
What would a mirror universe version of him be like? Would he be like a completely unleashed Lorca? It's like people tend to broadly reflect themselves, but they also will take license with them as they will. Sulu wasn't a lecherous womanizer kind of guy in the... but he was, I guess you might say, a passionate kind of guy when they showed him outside of it, you know, just, pressing buttons on a console. And so his mirror universe side, I guess everybody's mirror universe set version tend to be kind of sly and, you know, calculating in some way, shape, or form.
Or they could make
what happens if you're already that?
They could make him like the opposite of how he is. Because they would do that sometimes on Deep Space Nine with their mirror universe episodes. Like, the mirror universe Quark was like this big humanitarian. He was trying to, like, the people that the Alliance is like the superpower of the Cardassians and the Klingons and the Bajorans, like, teamed up. And they're like real anti-human. Yeah. So Quark was like trying to like smuggle human refugees and and get them to safe places.
I suppose if you were to do that, then what he would could one version of that could be him as a dedicated pacifist, which would be fascinating. Like, yeah, a pacifist who used guile, though. That would be interesting if he's breaking enemy supply lines in order to end the war or something like that, or you know, ready to take all of that horrible stuff on himself to stop it.
We might be jumping the gun. It might not even be the mirror universe.
We might be jumping the
gun. So we should say that, but I'm thinking it is.
All right.
But enough about Lorca. What about the big thing they did with Ash Tyler, where you get, like, the look at his torture from Laurel?
Right. So he was... he seems to have been horribly tortured for her, and she essentially used him as a sex toy.
Yeah, he's a rape victim.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he has PTSD from it.
Yep. And I thought that was probably the first time on the show in a way that torture's been depicted as like seriously since the Picard episode. What's the famous one?
The Chain of Command parts 1 and 2.
Yep. Since Chain of Command. You know, really showing somebody breaking down with a full-blown PTSD anxiety attack kind of thing.
Are you talking about like after the Borg with?
No, I meant Four Lights.
Okay.
Not necessarily. That was, of course, showing you the actual process.
But no, like it ends with him like talking to Troy, I believe, where. Mm-hmm. He's like, for a while, like,
and
I honestly thought there were 5 lights.
Right. And you know, that's, it was interesting that they took it seriously. You know, there's, I suppose, a potential stigma that, you would expect Trek to kind of break of a guy like Ash, who's kind of a badass, you know? He's, He kicked the shit out of the Klingons once he got loose. He was all man of action and stuff like that. Showing that kind of guy breaking down and just completely losing it to the point of being, you know, worthless in combat or whatever is a very humanizing kind of thing for him. They did, of course, have him rather interestingly. The Admiral got him back in the game. What was it she said to him to kind of pull him back? Was it she recognized his relationship?
No, she said, like, Burnham needs you.
Yeah, yeah.
And he seems like a really great guy. Like, he's, like, a super likable guy. And this is going to sound tragic, but... Yeah. So, Dave, this is the big theory that
right.
I've...
Do we need to warn people? Like, if this is this such a spoiler
it's all over...
It's out there?
But, yeah, I'm very confident this is the truth.
All right.
But, this might be a spoiler if you somehow
jump ahead like
yet,
5 minutes or something like that if you want to go completely speculation spoiler free. But I'm ready to hear.
So okay, the last time we saw Vok,
yes,
was when he was left on the Shinjo to die,
mm-hmm.
and Laurel says, you know, I can help you, but it's you're gonna have to sacrifice everything.
Mm-hmm.
And like at this point, what does he have left? Like he has like no followers, he has no ship,
right?
Okay, so the big theory that I came up with, and then I saw a bunch of other people online were thinking this,
mm-hmm.
but Vok was actually surgically altered, like they did in The Trouble with Tribbles.
Yep.
And he is Ash Tyler.
Interesting. Interesting.
And I think Ash Tyler doesn't know that he's Vok. So right. I think this great right. guy
he's got like essentially in the style of the replicants in Blade Runner or any number of sleeper agents,
yeah.
Cylon concepts, he does not know who he is.
Yeah, and like he's a good guy for Burnham to have as a romantic interest. He's a good soldier. He can go
out of curiosity, do people think that he's a completely invented personality?
Well, he did seem to have a history on Earth. Yeah, right. Like, Lorca, like, looked him up, and he was like, yeah, like, I guess you're from Seattle, and all this stuff. So, I'm thinking he was somewhat, there was a real Ash Tyler who died at the Battle of the Binary Stars,
right.
And they just surgically altered Vok, and then programmed him with this personality.
That's interesting. I think you may well be right. And so the argument would be here when he's reacting to Laurel that he's reacting to a...
I think he's remembering when he was Vok and he was right. actually having sex with Laurel.
Like yeah, normal sex, not rape sex.
Yeah, and that's why, like, Laurel seems... When she sees him in this episode, she's
by
like,
the way, that's
oh,
a horrible,
you.
And... That's a horrible term, and I feel bad for even having said that. For not being raped.
The scene at the end where she's in the brig,
mm-hmm.
and she's like, she says something to the effect of, I won't let them hurt you, or, something like that.
Mm-hmm. At the very end of this episode?
Yeah.
What did she say to him?
She says something like, I'll protect you, or I won't let them hurt you, or something like that.
And she said that to Ash.
When he goes and looks at her behind
that.
The force field.
I think I was expecting sort of like a, the very red herring that if you're right, they want us to think is like, oh, is he going to go and kill her or think about killing her? That's, sort of the direction is, that his PTSD might take. But
and here's another thing. Is
interesting notion.
The actor who played Vok,
yeah.
He's credited as Javad Iqbal, I believe so, which Iqbal is actually, if I'm remembering... Correct. That's the guy who plays Ash Tyler, Shahzad Latif. That's his actual last name.
Oh,
is Iqbal. And this guy who they're saying played Vok,
yeah,
has never been in any other show or movie, and there's no picture of him outside of the makeup.
Right.
So I think that was Shahzad Latif playing Vok. He was there with T'Kuvma. He was there like putting his hand over the fire. And T'Kuvma saying
that was all the actor who played...
Yeah, that was Ash Tyler.
Under a shit ton of
makeup.
And
it kind of makes sense why they would want to redesign the Klingons to look less human.
Because it's that much easier to hide.
You could hide a guy like that.
Yeah.
But
I think you could have still done it, by the way, with the pre-existing one, maybe with some contact lenses to make the eyes harder to spot, but...
Yeah.
That's an interesting theory. It is tragic, but I don't think... It's not like something that's like soul-crushing, because I think it's a neat idea. I do sort of feel terrible somewhat for the notion that Burnham's first kind of serious relationship... Or, no, her first relationship.
Yeah. And he's not even real. He's just a Klingon facade.
Yeah. Unless somehow there was a real one and they are, his... That is literally his, and mind engrams or whatever, overlaid in there for purposes of the spying mission. They brain scanned him or whatever, and it's not just some tapes, but actually there is a guy in there somewhere.
You said brain scan. In Errand of Mercy,
yeah.
Kor had the brain shifter, the brain sifter, whatever the
uh-huh.
or the brain ripper. If you turn it up to 11, that he was telling Kirk and Spock about I'll learn your secrets with this machine,
right?
So.
So you think, that may be, that's the colloquialism for something we're going to see used in more subtle ways.
Yeah. And we should also talk about the sex scene / rape scene flashbacks that we saw of
uh-huh.
Ash and Laurel. In the first time we ever saw female nipples on Star Trek.
There were some chilly episodes on Next Generation.
Well, like, Unclothed.
Revealed another.
Yeah, an exposed female nipple.
I told you, Lorca and Cornwell were the gateway to further as they trip down the path to nudity.
Still no nude Saru.
No, we're getting there.
We've only seen Threat Gangula, but a lot of us want to see Threat Genitalia. But
something else is rising on me, Burnham.
Well, we did see Klingon boobs tonight.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So that's an exciting development in Star Trek history. They've dropped the F-bomb. They've we've
had
seen
mutilated Cronenberg looking dead bodies.
Yep.
And we've had Klingon tits.
Yep. tell your parents. Tell your parents who watched it in the 60s and see how much it freaks them out.
Which...
Do you think... Do you think there's any of these things where they might be going over the line? That if they... nudity... If they got more a little more open about it, that would be like... rein it in, Trek. Stop being so lurid.
Well... I'm probably not the right person to ask about this because I don't have kids, and as a kid, I was never censored or... Like, I lived with my mom, and she never cared. She just was so happy I would shut up and, like, sit down and watch something.
Yeah.
She'd let me watch anything.
Right.
So I had, like, no filter on anything, and so I don't really know, like, where, I guess, a responsible parent should draw the line.
Right.
But yeah, I don't care if kids see this. Like, if a kid knows what sex is, I don't think it's bad if they see sex in a movie.
I'm trying to think, like, I'm sure there are kids who are regularly watching Game of Thrones. and you know that's really more for violence, a level of intensity really seen. When they cross over sex and violence is like when the show's at its most heinous. And I'm trying to think. Kids are watching Walking Dead, but that's probably really more violence as well. Even there, I usually find that kind of kids know their own limits. I don't actually know something I'm not sure about, like sort of demographic wise. Who's watching Discovery? Mostly old school fans? A lot of new people? Some new people? Any kids at all, really? Or do kids not care about Trek anymore?
I do kind of wish that it would be a little bit more accessible for kids, because just because I got into Star Trek at a super young age.
Right.
And Now,
would you have gotten into this at a super young age?
Yeah, I would have liked it. But
there is something...
My mom would not have paid for CBS All Access. So,
right. There is a special appeal, and I think probably more for kids, with those done-in-one episodes, you know, that you get kind of closure immediately. You don't have to... in a way, you don't have to stretch your mind towards ongoing storylines and remember stuff.
I watched Star Wars Rebels, which is made with a... child audience in mind.
Yeah.
And they're very serialized. I was actually thinking about that with this last season, how serialized that show is. And I think just as TV audiences have gotten a little bit more sophisticated, I think that's probably true of, like, children audiences today are a little bit more sophisticated.
No doubt. And there is simply more of a tradition of serialized stories has gained so much more traction. That said... Kids looking for, or parents who are looking for old school options, are going to be able to probably turn to the Orville. That is doing sort of...
Where they eat pot brownies out of the replicator.
Yeah, that's right. but otherwise, it's extremely wholesome. And you know what? Responsibly handled pot brownies are just fine and wholesome, too. not tradition for Star Trek... But you know, I'm trying to remember. Isn't Patrick Stewart like he's a?
He's stoned right now. He's either in New York or London stoned right now.
Right. So he's. But doesn't isn't it? I believe like actually for medicinal purposes.
He has arthritis. So.
Right. I feel like Patrick Stewart in many ways is Picard. I feel like if Picard would do it, then it's okay.
Then it's okay.
Yeah.
But as far as like the Klingon nudity goes, though, I think it's hypocritical that in Western society you can show a man without a shirt on, but when you show a woman without a shirt on, it's people freak out.
Right.
Like, so I, And I like, get it. I like looking at boobs, so right. I'm never going to say no to that.
Right. You know, if it was like a constant sexualization of female bodies over male bodies, that's really the only point at which it like kind of becomes kind of creepy, I think. I also, as filmed, these scenes were not particularly titillating because they were effectively, as presented, rape scenes. They seem to be pretty equal opportunity with their handsome guys and gals on this show.
Yeah.
I don't particularly feel like a leaning towards that. In fact, even though these I feel like they have shown a little bit more sexy time and precursors
to Lorca's nipples.
Seen so Lorca's nipples.
See Laurel's.
We've seen party people that are about to probably get it on, but yeah, I don't think of it as a particularly sexy show. Hadn't happened yet.
Yeah, but like Ash and Burnham, they'll hook up eventually. Like
I thought they
might have. Well,
I feel like they did.
They still had like their pants on when they woke up. So
they?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're like asleep.
I didn't
on his
notice
couch.
That. I just noticed that she was wearing some kind of like a undershirt type of thing, and I'm like, certainly if this was TOS, I'd say, oh, that's code for...
Or if they had someone, like, putting a boot back on.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I was like, actually, it's true. They could have shown a state of partial nudity. They could have seen her naked back or whatever.
He also just, like, talked about, like, his rape PTSD.
Right. It would be an awkward time to suddenly...
That wouldn't be arousing for either one.
Right.
I think they just, like, cuddled and snogged on the couch.
I think you're probably right. There is a tradition in movies of... I'm telling you my dramatic, sad story. Suddenly we're making out and having sex. It happens sometimes. I don't completely buy it, but it's dramatic. Anyway, I think you're right, though.
Then after that happens, Laurel is going to give Vok his Klingon memories back.
Yeah.
And it's going to be painful and tragic, and Ash will be like, I'm losing all of my mind and my memories and my love for Burnham. And then he turns into Vok. And he's like, Michael Burnham, I hate you. You killed my messiah, Tecuvma. Now right. Die.
Or is it going to be such a well-done sort of mind transfer that he has to knowingly feel the same emotions that Ash does if he goes after her?
Or maybe they bring in like some Vulcan... Katra stuff, and they get like Ash like out of Vok, or right.
There could be some weird mindscape thing, like when she was dealing with Sarek. And,
yeah, maybe
and
that was a
him.
Setup for something else.
Yeah, we haven't seen Sarek in a while.
Yeah,
but yeah, those are all interesting dramatic possibilities. Assuming your crazy theory is true, I think it probably is.
Yes, but yeah, Dave's like the last person to find out about this. Like everyone online have been talking about it. For weeks.
I never pick at that stuff.
He hides at a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
I don't either, but like I can't like I'll see like a headline somebody shared on Facebook or something, and then like I can't make myself forget it.
Right.
And then like
you're looking at headlines I'm not looking at though.
Well, it's just like I'm scrolling through my feed and like it just pops up. Like I can't like unsee
well, was,
it. After
was the
I see
headline
it.
That Cole is burn, is Tyler?
Vok.
Sorry, Vok.
Well, no, like this is. I kind of figured this out just thinking about it.
Oh yeah,
like,
that's right.
Because I knew like Vok was gonna be introduced in the prison and
right. Well, that's why you're a detective.
I'm not though, but. The as far as like the other Klingon characters go, we should talk about Cole because this is like a big meaty episode for him, and we see the death of Cole.
Yes,
and I loved seeing the actor Kenneth Mitchell. He got to chew the scenes in English a little bit when Burnham flips on the universal translator. She actually confronts him on the bridge of the ship.
That was neat how they did it, where you could hear in the background, at least at the start of it, echoes of her kind of as or what she was saying in Klingonese.
Mm-hmm. There was a Hunt for Red October kind of thing, where, like, they... Not exactly like that, but, they found a way
Hunt
to,
for
like,
Red October very cleverly showed you that we are going to be showing you English because that's what you're going to understand best, you, the audience, but we mean you to understand, to realize this is in Klingon.
Yeah, and even before he started speaking English, though...
I said in Klingon. Like, I meant in Russian, of course, in the movie, yeah.
But, like, even before Cole started speaking English, like, I love, like, some of the... Just the diction he was using with the enchanted ship.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like, stuff like that.
Right, his sort of disdain for the Discovery, but kind of using these sort of, I don't know, like, fairy tale tones to describe it.
And I'm not sure why Burnham felt the need to explain a universal translator to Cole, because Klingons were exposed to translator technology on Enterprise.
Interesting.
But I love...
You think that was really more for the audience?
Yeah, I guess, because it was, like, the first time they ever had, like, Klingon speaking English on the... Or being translated like that.
They wanted the big
show.
Dramatic moment to go ahead and be in English and not something you had to read subtitles for.
But I liked the way that Cole responded to that, where he said, all I see is another attempt by humanity to rob us of our identity.
Right.
And he's, like, super offended. Like, you won't even, like, let my... You're coming after our Klingon culture so much that you won't even let me sound Klingon to your ears. Like, that's so insulting to me.
That's an interesting idea, because I don't think anybody has ever... discuss the universal translator in essentially nationalist terms.
Yeah.
But it certainly has a poignancy at the moment. What was it? Yesterday, 60,000 nut bar nationalists marched in Poland. These are scary times. I read what their fears were, and it was like a cross... It was like somehow... anti-Semitic, anti-Muslim, homophobic. It was like all of that stuff simultaneously. It, like, just the most freakish collection of conspiracy and paranoia.
Yeah, the people threatened by any type of multiculturalism.
Right. It's interesting she also brought up, by the way, she's like, I heard you were supposed to be honorable.
Yeah.
Is that the first time we've really kind of heard that discussed on the show?
Takovma talked about honor.
Okay.
When he actually to Cole.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I love that she called him on his shit, because, yeah, like, he has done some dishonorable things, and that's kind of a complaint I see online sometimes.
He didn't bomb any corpses. But that's straight up Federation style, yo.
Yeah, I'm still okay with that. I would do that too if my ship and my crew were in danger. I would have no problem doing that.
Yeah, but you couldn't cut it as a Starfleet captain. They wouldn't have you.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
you get to be a detective in San Francisco when they need a detective for an episode.
I wouldn't be able to make it through a semester at the academy. I'm not a very good student. But I would drop out because I'd be too busy watching whatever the equivalent of, like, if people who watch Star Trek now, like, whatever form of entertainment they have instead of that.
Right,
I'd be too involved with that to, like, do homework.
Is it whatever Harry Kim watched?
You're talking about Captain Proton?
Yeah.
That was Tom Paris.
Paris, right.
But the fight with Burnham and Cole... I like that because the last time she was on the ship, she saw Captain Georgiou die, and she assassinated Takovma and started this war.
Yep.
And here she kind of, like, plays a big role in ending the war.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of a little redemption stuff. I just love how, like, nasty they made Cole, where he's picking his teeth with the comm badge, or just, like, the Starfleet
the
badge
insignia, yeah.
of Philippa Georgiou.
Yeah. And they had mentioned in a previous episode, they had basically made out that he had consumed her.
Well, right? No, that was Vok and Laurel that ate her.
Right.
So Cole wasn't there.
That's right. But we know that this is that's kind of a Klingon-y thing.
But yeah, and she basically says, like, you're not honorable, you took over this ship, I know that this wasn't your ship, I came here and killed Takovma, you weren't here, and, you know, fight me. And she's trying to buy time, stay alive, but that, it was cool that they could use her Vulcan martial arts, the Seuss-Mana stuff.
Again. It was a pretty good fight. I felt that it was, as depicted, he was, like, constantly pressing her. She was barely holding her own.
Yeah.
Which, in a dramatic fight with somebody who's a big boss character.
Yeah, he's a boss-level bad guy.
You want that to be the case. You don't want it to be like, oh, the hero's just going to kick their ass or whatever.
Yeah, and she only got out of that alive because she was beamed out at the last minute. Thanks to Lieutenant Stamets' sacrifice and making all those spore jumps, you know, they were able to find the location of the cloak ship and unload
on it. When they did do that final spore drive jump, they did show it, like, visually split into two, and then the two pieces come together again. So, always, whenever they do the spore drive, there's a visual, you know, blurring and spinning and all that stuff. But this was definitely different.
Yeah, this showed the ship kind of, like, it split into two and then came back together. Like, yeah. Again, like, that mirror type of imagery where they've shown, like, visual references to mirrors or reflections, like, the entire, or sometimes, like, less literal stuff.
Chapter one.
Yeah, sometimes it's very,
symbolic, it's like the...
Very symbolic, like, the tardigrade was a reflection of Burnham and...
Or Through the Looking Glass, which she was one of her childhood books. Yeah, the
Alice in Wonderland book.
Or it was like this more literal thing, like, what was it, Stamets turned from a mirror and his reflection took a minute to turn.
Yeah, that was super literal, but...
Yeah.
So we could just, like, talk about Stamets a little bit. So, we learned in the last episode he's having, like, these weird side effects from the spore jumps. He doesn't want his partner, Dr. Culber, to know about
it. I love Tilly's accidental reveal of that. Just having... She's like, yeah, I'm sure you've told him. And then there were great looks from both. What's the doctor's name?
Hugh Culber.
Say it again.
Hugh Culber.
Culber. From Culber, and then also a great look from Stamets. A if looks could kill kind of moment.
Yeah, it was. And then didn't Stamets is sleeping on the couch tonight.
Yes, and then there was she sort of did the she didn't mime I'm sorry or sorry kind of like that.
I don't remember her reaction. She definitely
at some point,
like, she knew she fucked up.
Right, when he gave her the look, she said she clearly mouthed some words, and I think it was like sorry, kind of like yeah. But yeah, it was it had some weight to it, and at the same time, he needed to tell him. It's trying to carry that all on his own or whatever. I mean, he said they showed it in the previously on. He was worried about, like, what would how all the multiple bad ways this could go for his boyfriend if he found out. I'm kind of sick of characters hiding shit in it's a superhero trope, it's a sci-fi trope, they use it all the time, and it almost always goes poorly, and they almost always would have been better off to confide in somebody. And they're getting better about it in some places, on some TV shows, and sometimes they're still holding on to tradition.
Yeah, it's a frustrating trope.
I'm glad it came out.
Yeah, I'm glad it's something.
Good job, Tilly. They
brought it up in episode 8, and then they resolve it in episode 9. So that's the way it should be done.
Yep.
But the motivation that we talked about earlier that Lorca gave Stamets is that, like, he, was showing him how we could use the spore drive jumping technology to peer into other universes.
He said other dimensions.
I think he said other universes.
Okay, so. Yeah.
And then Stamets being, like, the explorer at heart, he was like, yeah, I'll put my life on the line. I'll do, like, these 133 jumps, not only to win this war, but also, for the future of our exploration.
Yep.
And
then he kind of laid down the law at the end. He was like, now that I've done this, I'm done.
Yeah. He said, I'll do one more jump, though, just... to get them to the safety of that star base. He said, like, he would take one for the team, get the crew and the ship to Starbase 46, I think is where they were going. And they hyped up, like, this one final jump so many times that you knew something was going to go wrong.
Right.
But
he's 1 week to retirement. He's got his yacht picked out. I lost my train of thought.
The one last spore drive jump.
Right. I don't know what I was going to mention about that.
He did that weird thing with his eyes, though, after they make this jump to we don't know where it is.
Right. But. Well, I was going to talk about how he had been through, that way he laid down the law, told Lorca that this is the last of it. Lorca gave him an honorable okay. He's like, you did your time. You served well. There were questions on the show about, like, oh, why aren't they using spore drives all over the place in the future? Well, clearly it's actually not super easy to do it. You have to either torture an animal to do it or destroy a person's mind. And I suspect there's
and
still
illegal eugenics, because they had to genetically alter Stamets and give him tardigrade DNA.
Right. One of the very reasons why he didn't want Dr. Culber to have to reveal his role.
Yeah.
So there's already enough reasons why it might not ever be seen again, but also they did as far as, like, that was the one secret weapon they had at the time. Well, now they have a second secret weapon. They can pierce the cloaks. That said, have they ever explained, like, why the Klingons it's kind of annoying to give the cloaks as their big thing, only to, you know,
take them away.
Take them away, and then also knowing that
they'll
have
them again.
Knowing that they'll get them again by Kirk's time.
Yeah, so
it's not a huge complaint. It's just a little bit. No, but it feels a little lazy.
I'm glad you brought that up, because people will complain about this, and I'll say, like, oh, this is like continuity breaking. But and I think the Okudos even mention this in the Star Trek Encyclopedia, like something that like they come up with, is that we should assume that cloaking technology is evolving constantly, because people are always finding ways to detect cloaked ships.
Right.
So people are having to develop right. better cloaking.
Like, there might be spans devices. Of like a few decades where, oh, you know, there's just no tech that, you know, can be, that can't be seen through. And then suddenly somebody will pull it off, and then it's, you know, they're like, oh shit, we got to watch out for that again.
Well, I think that they came up with this to explain in Star Trek VI,
mm-hmm.
which is set in Kirk's time. It's in the 2290s.
Mm-hmm.
There is a prototype bird of prey that can fire when cloaked.
Right.
But we know, like, later during Picard's time, you know, we see Klingons and Romulans cloaking all the time, and they still can't fire when cloaked.
Right.
So how did that come about? And the idea that the Okudas came up with is that, like, well, it uses the older style cloaking device that people eventually figured out how to detect.
Right.
So then they had to come up with, like, a newer cloaking device, and with the newer one, it's still cloaked, you're still hidden, but you can't fire weapons.
Right.
And it was just, you know, part of that technological evolution.
It makes some sense.
But
I don't think it's too hard to push that into place.
Yeah.
I had a question about the, speaking of Klingons, though. Broadly speaking, one of the intents of the show that they spoke about in any number of interviews and things was to kind of give us, you know, show more Klingon culture, Klingon perspective on the war. For some reason, I kind of felt like I didn't really feel like I got that much insight into the Klingons.
I don't think we're done with them yet. With Lorel, I think
there's still more to go. I mean, clearly there's still more to go.
Yeah.
But they're sort of, you know, other than seeing this as kind of a nationalist sort of offensive for them, and you know, a chance to kind of regain their pride and all that, I don't know that we've seen, you know, any great deal of sophistication. I guess that's I kind of had hoped to see more Klingon politicking, almost, you know, nuances within that. The show actually does paint with pretty broad strokes sometimes, even though it can be very subtle. But it generally moves with we're never going to have long conversations that are not sort of moving the story forward in strong ways.
Yeah.
So you know, a next gen style debate table thing is probably not going to happen.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the issue both of us are having with this show, with this first I guess we can call this like the first story arc is kind of concluded now.
Yep.
The show moved at like a very fast pace.
Right.
And
once they got going, things happened pretty quickly.
I would have liked a few more episodes. I would like to see, like, you know, a little bit more battles, get like explanations on, you know, how's the Federation doing in the war. Like, I know, like, in one episode they mentioned
it felt a little disjointed, where they would just suddenly be like, oh, we're winning, oh, yeah. We're losing.
Yeah. So like, if I could actually, you know, if more show and less tell, then
right. It would have been nice to have a sense of that rather than them having to just explicitly see it.
But, you know, Deep Space Nine did a war, but they introduced the Dominion in season 2, and they have, like, rising tensions. They basically have all-out war declared, like, the end of season 5,
mm-hmm.
and then they spend 2 years fighting the war, and we see it go in, you know, the Dominion's winning for a while, then, like, the Federation and Klingons are winning for a while, then, you know, eventually they win, and it's, like, a big deal.
Right.
And there's specific battles that have, like, big consequences, and both sides get new allies,
mm-hmm.
and you have the whole, like, galacto-political climate is shifting, you know, culture on Earth is changing, and you know, stuff like that, so this show did their war, if assuming that we're going to be done with the Klingon War now. It did that in 9 episodes.
And right.
It wasn't as good.
I think what we have to realize in some ways is that the and this is kind of that big picture thing you've talked about often, is like, it's hard to judge it on a per episode basis until you see the end, is what was their goal? Because even though it was set during a war, I don't think they really didn't fully want to make this a wartime show. In some ways, they were resisting it from early on. It still tended to be about characters and ideas. It's, at the very least, they weren't shooting for the sophistication of the sophisticated look at war that you got in DS9. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Longest Day, which is about D-Day.
Yeah, no, I love that movie.
Yeah, and it is famously told from both the perspective of the Americans and Germans.
And the French Resistance, and right. the Brits, and the Canadians.
And that feels almost closer to what DS9 was doing. I think what they wanted to tell, here was a full... It was a war story, but as lens through a very singular crew.
Yeah,
they wanted to tell dramatic stories about what happened to the crew and how it changed their lives and all that. But, you know, there was, you know, this is one of the things that almost feels weird, but, like, I get why they didn't do it. You know, we never saw other admirals really doing much conferring. We never saw, fleets in the battle. We didn't see any other battles, really, that weren't part of the Discovery other than the Battle of the Binary Stars.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much of that is intentional to keep the Discovery isolated from other Starfleet ships, because
right.
they...
It certainly had a very unique mission.
Yeah, and if maybe some of the stuff on there is, like, top secret and hasn't been declassified, and well, maybe that's their explanation for why other ships don't have spore drive technology. Here's one of my theories.
Well, I guess they don't have it because it's still in development.
Well, what I'm thinking might happen is that this ship, you know, they're in the Mirror Universe, mm-hmm. so we're going to spend 6 episodes there when the show comes back in January.
Yep.
And then when they go back to the Prime Universe,
mm-hmm.
they get there, but they're in the wrong time.
Wrong time.
Yeah, like they get there and they're like way in the future or something.
Why do you think that? Do you think that, are you warming to the notion that they're going to end up time travelers?
I think that's a possibility, but I think that would explain why there's the spore drive isn't used again, because, you know, they get there and they find, like, in the historical files, they're like, yeah, there were 2 spore drive ships. One, everybody turned inside out, and the other one...
disappeared and was never
seen
again.
Yeah, it won the Klingon War and then disappeared.
Right.
And so we just stopped messing around. The 2 scientists
mm-hmm.
involved with that, Stamets and his buddy Thrall, who is on the other ship, the Glenn...
Yeah.
Both those guys are gone.
Right.
No one else knows how to do this, so we just left it alone. It seemed like a bad idea.
Right. And then they are free to pursue their black ops or time traveling or whatever it is that they end up doing on the show.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I could see that. If they do time travel, how are they going to lens it when if they did end up in, say, Kirk's time or whatever? It's only a little ways ahead of them, but, like, they're not going to do what they did with Trouble with Tribbles. They're not going to digitally insert themselves in old footage. They would be.
That'd be cool if they did. But, I'd be on board with that. But I don't know. I know a lot of people are reluctant to have more time travel stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I love time travel in Star Trek, and I think it has a phenomenal track record with it, but
A lot of good stories have been told. I think my big issue with it, and this is probably I think what some people are feeling, is that they make a point about how dangerous it is. So although they break at that all the time for the sake of good stories, it still feels like something that shouldn't be something where anybody would ever regularly be doing it and consider themselves part of the Federation.
But one of the best Star Trek movies, Spock just decides, yeah, we can fly around the sun really quick and go back in time and solve this problem.
Like, sometimes you need a story, you need something to happen fast.
And, like, Kirk isn't like, you couldn't have, like, done this 6 months ago and stopped my son from getting stabbed to death, you fucking asshole. But
Don't overthink it.
Yeah.
I did want to mention something about it. This is a very small thing, and I can't remember if this might... I think this actually might be a credit to the Kelvin movies. When Burnham and Tyler are about to go over there, they kneel down with their phasers ready. Actually, they're like doing like this.
Yeah, we were pointing that out with the people I was watching the episode with earlier tonight. Okay, it made more sense here.
Yeah.
Because, like, they're beaming into a possible combat zone.
Yeah.
And so you want to be, like, small targets.
Yeah.
When Spock did it, it was because J.J. Abrams thought that would look cool.
Yeah.
It was the only reason.
I mean, do you know that? Or that you're just your surmise.
If J.J. Abrams didn't think that looked cool, it would not have been in the movie.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's probably true. But...
Oops. But
It does look cool. One, it does look cool. And two, it especially when they're doing their tactical stuff, it seems like an especially awesome thing. So just one of those things I was like, oh, that's badass.
Yeah.
This episode.
Do you have any other thoughts on this episode?
You know when they're creeping around on the Klingon ship?
Mm-hmm.
I like it when you can creep around on ships without being discovered. I just find it's a fun dramatic contrivance, even though I feel like there's all sorts of alarms that could go off. Even firing a phaser has sometimes been shown to trigger all sorts of alarms on ships. But it's cool when it doesn't. It's sort of like in Star Wars, you can sneak around on the Death Star a little bit. There's enough empty space in there that... part of it is just seeing that, you know, using what you've got for a little bit of a sandbox. It's a sandbox for kind of adventure and stuff, and a bridge isn't just a bridge. It's also a place where characters can use the geography for hiding and creeping around. And I just thought that was cool to see the characters get to do some of that.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that they didn't just arrive and just have to, like, start shooting dudes instantly. They can kind of stealth it a little
ways. It's a fun trope. It's fun to do in video games. It's fun to do in RPGs.
Yeah, like... exactly. It's a trope that I almost always will support, unless it's, I don't know, maybe Battlestar Galactica or something like that, where I feel like, oh, they should just teleport over, or they should land there and get executed. let's see if there's anything. The aliens from Pavo, is that the name?
Yeah.
I guess they are not. They did not want to do a big how we would handle the Organians thing because those guys never reared their heads again. they were basically like, we turned on the beacon, we turned on the radio. Y'all just do whatever you do.
Yeah, we brought the Klingons over here so y'all can sit down and talk it out. And oh my God, instead you blew them all up.
I did wonder what they thought about that because I think they're like, we just want to grant universal peace and serenity. Oh, you assassinated them? Okay. Well, back to the drawing board. Let's see. When they took down the Ship of the Dead, it was kind of neat because they were pounding them with photon torpedoes, and they actually you saw the screen cracking. It was It reminded me of the suicide run in Return of the Jedi from the A-Wing guy. Actually, I guess that wasn't a suicide run. That was an accident that took out the bridge where it's like he literally just flew right through there. It looks like... And you saw fireballs, plasma venting right into... exploding right into it.
Yeah,
that was what I would call a definitive death.
The visual effects in this episode were great. There were some great shots of the ships if you're shippist, shippy.
Yeah, you got to see more of, I think, the Discovery maneuvering around, and see its kind of, lean form, which is kind of cool. It has a neat predatory look.
Even some of, the calmer moments, where it's just showing one of the ships just floating in orbit of that planet. They looked great. There were some long shots where you get, a really good look at the ships.
Yep.
When the camera was, panning around the Ship of the Dead, and, You're looking into the front part, the bridge area where Cole is, and the camera goes down. You see some of the operators of the ship doing stuff. Stuff like that was really good.
That's all I gotta say about that show. Yeah.
So this is gonna be it for our Star Trek Discovery talk until January.
Are we gonna mention the name of the episode?
Yeah, and I keep forgetting the name of the episode, but I believe it is.
Despite yourself. Yes. So. Referring to oneself as if you were spiting your own very own self.
Yeah,
what could that possibly mean?
Like if you were in this strange new place you've never been before, but it's a reflection of the place you just came from.
A reflective universe?
Yeah, almost like a reflective universe. So,
I will be excited to see what they do with that. What tropes will they want to use? What are they gonna subvert? You know, they're not just gonna. I feel strongly that it is not just gonna be characters in goatees that are mean.
And we've also decided.
What if they still have the tardigrade hooked up to it because they're cruel bastards?
Yeah,
they would probably wring every last bit that they could out of that.
There's a mirror tardigrade that just got tortured to death.
Yeah, or it has a little mustache itself, and it's into the pain because it's a little S&M tardigrade.
It's put the nipple clamps back on. I'm not done yet.
So we're going to finally, and we will finally get tardigrade nipples too. The show's not done with nipples either, not by a long shot.
Yeah, it can only only go up from here. But we decided that the first few episodes, the writers didn't quite have all their shit together.
Right.
And then after a few episodes...
seems to be like what we kind of heard from behind the scenes stuff. And it sort of fits with what we've seen.
So I'm looking forward to seeing, here's, like, the next story arc that they've come up with that they actually created, after they got their shit together.
Right,
so.
And they will probably have, pretty cemented ideas of how they want to use the characters and you know, the tone of the show and stuff like that.
On all, the first Star Trek Discovery story, this chapter one of Star Trek Discovery, better than Encounter at Farpoint.
Yes, I would have to agree,
That was my litmus test.
By an order of magnitude, perhaps, even. I have to say, at this point, I'm, fully warmed up to pretty much all the characters. I don't think there's anybody who I'm like, I wish they would drop that person.
There's not a Neelix, in other words.
Correct.
I'm fine with Neelix. Dave hates him. I think he's fine.
I was okay with Neelix.
You like Tolkien, though. He's just, think of him as a hobbit. He is a hobbit on a starship.
My problem with Neelix is that they didn't, I think, use him as well as they could have. They kept returning to the same jokes. Oh, we don't want to eat your nasty ass food, Neelix.
Waka waka.
Yeah, there was potential that was untapped. That's all.
Keep watching Voyager.
All right.
But when he gives that monologue about the war and finding that child that got fucked up by the weapon that the Harponians use, That was a heartstring puller.
Yeah, I like that. I like the one where the episode where he thought that he was paralyzed.
Yeah, but maybe we'll.
I like the episode where he was combined with Tuvok. That was awesome.
Yeah, Tuvok. Some people hate Tuvix, but I think it was one of the best Voyager episodes.
Oh, really? I kind of assumed that it was well liked.
Yeah,
that was a really interesting episode.
I think some people just hate the idea of a transporter can't combine your soul with someone else and create this new identity. They're mad at the science of it.
It would definitely be the first time that they had ever done anything weird with the transporter or the holodeck. So and anything like that.
That's sarcasm.
So I understand how those people could be very upset.
One of the very first episodes of Star Trek was a transporter splitting Captain Kirk into good Kirk and evil Kirk. So. One of the very first episodes.
I don't even know why we installed morality meter in the transporter. It was probably, in retrospect, a mistake.
We're tangenting
right,
though.
Right.
So back on track.
Text Trek.
The next Text Trek podcast, this was 29. The next one will be number 30, where we will be talking about the Star Trek Discovery tie-in novel, Desperate Hours. So if you want to be part of that conversation, you might want to read the book.
Yep.
We'll probably start off with a non-spoiler talk of the book, and then we'll let you know when we get into the
if anybody who has read it or is reading it and will have read it in the next week or two wants to pose some questions or comments or anything to Text Trek, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
We will answer them on air and tell you why you're wrong with your favorite character or something like that. Now, tell us what you think on it and what stuff you thought was cool and what you thought was uncool.
And speaking of Mirror Universe, we also have the Mirror Broken comic that we'll be talking about before Discovery comes back. So we have plenty of stuff to talk about until January.
Mirror Broken being the next generation Mirror Universe comic, which has been a lot of fun.
So, and until next time, live long and prosper, y'all. Thank all of you so much for checking out this installment of Text Trek. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to like our YouTube videos and subscribe to our channel. Audio-only version of episodes are available at our website, www.text-trek.com. Please check out our site, especially if you just want an audio-only podcast. We have that available for you. Y'all can also keep up with us online. You can follow us on Twitter, @ TX Trek, or you can check us out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/text-trek. Please, by all means, let us know what you think by dropping a comment anywhere you see fit. We definitely want to hear your feedback. Let us know what you liked and what you would like to see more of, what you would like to see differently going forward.
If you want to email me directly, go ahead. I can be reached at fatheryactual@text-trek.com. Thank all y'all again. Take care.